Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another version of Bill Roten on Sports here in an undisclosed location in Harlem, USA. This is as much as I'll tell you. You know, here with an exceptional human being, a tremendous professional. We've actually done a couple panels together, and they haven't fired either one of us yet. So that's a good that's a good sign. Anyway, we're here with Maria Taylor, the wonderful Maria Taylor. She's an analyst with ESPN. You've seen her doing a remarkable job before the pandemic and after the pandemic under really trying situations. The NBA Roundup, just a tremendously talented person. You've seen her doing college football. She's covering basketball. She's covered volleyball. She played volleyball in college, University of Georgia. Just really, I can't say enough just about how talented she is. We'll get into more later, but she really goes beyond just balls and strikes and baskets. She speaks her mind. She's insightful. Anyway, there's more I can say, but let me just bring.
There's a lot to her.
There's a lot to her. A woman of substance, Maria Taylor. Hey, Maria, thank you so much for coming on Bill Roten on Sports.
Thanks for having me. So excited to be a part of this interview. And I've looked up to you for a long time, so it's good to finally be on your show, not on a panel together.
I know. We'll talk about panels later. of course, you got Jamal Murphy, my co-host for a few years. Holding it down, Brooklyn, New York. Jamal, what's going on?
What's up, Bill? All good here in Brooklyn. A little rainy, but, you know, can't complain. I'm chilling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay. So Maria, just there's so much I want to talk to you about, but what's it been like as a professional during the pandemic? What's the experience been like for you?
It's been kind of a roller coaster. Honestly, it came to a screeching halt. It was almost like we were at the top of, we had just gotten through NBA All-Star. I was headed home for a couple of days, and then I was going to go to Bristol and host the women's basketball tournament up through the Final Four. We had plans to bring NBA Countdown to New Orleans with us so that we could have like NBA meets women's basketball, and all of that stopped. I mean, we all found out together that there weren't going to be any more games for a while. I don't think we knew for how long. And then you start to roll a little bit. So you're like, okay, what does our new reality look like? I started doing some IG lives with football players that were preparing for the draft. We started preparing for the draft. Then I traveled for the first time, went out to Bristol. And obviously you guys all watched the commissioner from his basement as he's announcing draft picks and, you know, trying to find ways to make that happen with half of our analysts. We had Pollock and Herbie and Desmond Howard. They were all at home. And to flash forward now, the NBA restart, where we're back in studios for the first time, like I'm able to see cameramen again, and we've got audio guys. And honestly, like every time we come in the studio, we cheer for each other because we're just happy to be back sitting in a studio. So it's been a roller coaster, a wave of emotions. I think that obviously with so many much bigger issues going on that have absolutely nothing to do with sports. It makes you realize what's most important too. So I know that when I was at home in Georgia, spending more time with my family, spending more time being quiet, thinking about like, what are the projects I really want to work on moving forward? Because not all of it's guaranteed. Sports can stop on a dime, and you want to make sure that you're doing, you know, something that really speaks to you and speaks to your calling. So I think it's been so many different things, but it is good to have a normalcy and just waking up and going to a studio every day.
You bring up a great point. I think a lot of people in our business were stunned by how quickly sports was just taken away just like that. I think that, you know, we're so immersed in this. We think that sports is an essential worker, you know. How did you, I guess, were you stunned by just the suddenness of how sports was just eliminated?
Absolutely. I think we're living through a time that it's completely unprecedented. No one ever saw it coming. No one knows when it's going to end, and no one knows what it's going to look like even 5 days from now. Like, every day is a shocker and a surprise. But yeah, you're right. Like, so much of my life has revolved around sports that you start to realize, okay, the only jobs that are guaranteed are like doctors, you know, and maybe a police officer. Like, there's no other job is guaranteed. Only essential workers actually matter. The news matters. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't matter that we didn't have a baseball game. It's like, we need to figure out where you can go get tested for the coronavirus, and you need to watch the news. So it's so interesting to just put everything into perspective and to think about, okay, yes, you know, these athletes make millions of dollars, but these teachers are about to go back to school and risk their lives trying to teach our kids, you know, and how important is that? So it flips everything on its head, and it's a shocker and it's surprising. And you feel for the senior Sabrina Ionescu, who wasn't able to play, you know, and make it to the Final Four in her final season, you know, or the kids like Justin Fields that are trying to get a petition signed to play this year because he has an opportunity to win a Heisman, or he has an opportunity to win a national championship. But obviously there's just so much bigger issues that are floating above us right now that we can't solve it with sports.
So let's get into that a little bit. You mentioned, you know, you were an athlete in college. We're seeing now what's going on with college football or college sports in general. The Big Ten, Pac-10 have canceled their seasons, but the SEC, Big 12, ACC plowing along. As a former athlete, how do you feel about, you know, athletes, you know, wanting to play, being asked to continue to play? I'm talking about college athletes.
Yeah.
You know, trying to find their own voice. What's your feeling on the whole college football sports landscape right now?
I think that it's being, there's a spotlight being cast on it. It's a great thing. I think the student athletes are realizing that their voices are so much bigger than the sport because they are the sport. And that's something that, you know, being on the sidelines since, I've probably been doing sidelines since like 2011, so almost 10 years. It's great to finally see that. And I've had so many conversations with players where they have felt like their voices have been silenced, or they can't say certain things, or although something makes them uncomfortable, they might talk to someone on the staff and be like, yeah, we'll just deal with it. And to be honest, it was the same way when I was in school. It was just like, the way that you function as an athlete is, that is your boss. This is your job. You do what they say, or you can go somewhere else. There's no in between. And so for once, it seems as though the power is being given to the people, like the ones that are at work every day and, you know, trying to balance school and now trying to balance their health and not getting this deadly virus and also playing and, you know, sending money back to their parents, like all of these things that they're dealing with. While also, I just talked to a student athlete maybe 2 days ago, literally in between our half times, and he called and he's like, I got back to campus and we still have buildings on our campus that are named after segregationists, or they're named after people who were slave owners. And what am I supposed to do? Because I don't want to throw my name out there and be, he's like, I respect Kylin Hill for what he did. You know, he got the flag taken down in Mississippi, but I don't want to insert my name in the middle of that. So how do I, as an athlete with a voice, you know, move forward or make sure that ball is still rolling and we're not losing momentum? And I think that it's important that we all recognize that these are the things that these student athletes are dealing with. So it's not just about whether or not, you know, they catch 5 passes for 100 yards, which is in itself pressure packed. Right. They're trying to figure out, how do I use my influence when I know that this is not right on my campus? Am I really being treated safely? Is this the time where we are going to get the rights that we've been owed for a very long time? You know? And so it's been interesting to hear all of that. So, you know, I've always been I love college football, but I also understand that I make money off the backs of student athletes that are in their prime. And in some ways, this is the most valuable their bodies will ever be. And they don't make any money, or, you know what I mean? There's nothing that they're given off of that. There's no trade in value for them. And so that disheartens me. That makes me sad. And I just hope that it changes. I hope the landscape changes. And I love that these coaches are being like put on front street. Like, you need to say and do the right things. You need to adjust your thought process. You need to listen to them. You need to understand where they're coming from. You need to address your coaching staff. You need to see if you have diversity in your building. Like, all of those things are important. And I'm glad it's coming to light now.
But that's interesting that you mentioned the athletes being in their prime, even in college. You never hear anybody talk about it like that. But that is true. I mean, that's part of the athletic prime is while they're in college. And so for, you know, anywhere from 1 to 4 years, they're actually not getting compensated for their prime years. Right. And I've never really thought about it like that.
If you think about the NBA, like, we're looking at Jason Tatum is 22 right now. And like, he's in his prime and he's getting paid prime money. His next deal is going to be a blockbuster. Right. You know, these kids, sometimes they graduate and they're 22 if they spend 5 years at school. You know what I mean? Like, they are not getting the money. Most of them are leaving at around 21. So we've missed prime years. You know what I mean? And some aspects of it. And I understand their bodies have to mature a little more. It is football, so it's a little different. But if you put them in if everyone went to the pros at the age of 19 and they kind of like progressed together, then it would look just like the NBA and we would have these super young superstars, you know, and that's what it is. And they get paid in their prime, but they don't have that opportunity.
You know, you talk about giving athletes a voice. So you see the Pac-10, the Pac-12, Big 10 said no football. Now you've got athletes in the Big 10, you know, petitioning. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? I mean, I'm asking you to not only look at it as – like when you were a 20-year-old, but now that you're a seasoned professional, you know, like having children, you know, I mean, you know, Jamal, you said your kids would eat ice cream every single day if you let them. So,
no question.
Maria, what do you think about the decision that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten made, and the SEC, ACC want to soldier on, Big 12 want to soldier on? Where do you come down on this?
I think that the Big Ten and Pac-12 decided we cannot guarantee the health and safety of our student athletes, right? Like, we can't guarantee it, and therefore we shall not move forward. And so it is my hope that the SEC and ACC have come up with a way to guarantee that. Like, that's the only way you can move forward, right? Is if you truly believe that the health and safety of your student athletes is going to be put first at all costs. And so they're continuing to move forward towards the season. I understand if I was 20, if I was, you know, going into my senior year and it's supposed to be the best year and there's so many things on the line, I too would have a petition written up. Like, I want to play. Athletes want to play. You want to do whatever you're best at. If you're a writer, you want to write. You know what I mean? I'm a broadcaster. I want to broadcast, and I'm going to do everything in my willpower. I was fighting to get back in the studio before it was safe to get back in the studio because I was sick and tired of doing everything on Wi-Fi and having a delay. And I was like, I can't be my best self without the studio.
Right.
And these athletes feel the same way. It's like, I have been trained to do this. I cannot be my best self without this field or this court or whatever. And so I understand what a 20-year-old feels like, period, dot nothing. But I do think, like, you're taking your health and safety into your own hands. If you go out there and play, I think it's been proven that the NBA has the only sustainable way of marching on with the season. It is a bubble. It's the only way. And we've seen the opposite effect of that, which is Major League Baseball. I mean, even golf, like, we've had golfers that come down with the coronavirus, and that's not, you don't touch each other every single possession or every single play. So we are going to see players come down with it. We've already seen players come down with it. I don't know what, you know, what is the point of diminishing returns? When do we decide what that is? And I think, again, if one life is lost, we will all look back and think how silly the entire conversation was, the debate was, period.
Right. No, it's, I mean, the NBA, like you mentioned it, the bubble seems to be the only real way to go. I mean, we already see evidence of it. The NBA, the past 3 weeks, no cases. The WNBA is in a bubble. They're doing well. NHL is in a bubble. But, you know, like you mentioned, you still have the NFL, you still have college football, you still have Major League Baseball. It's a different situation, more players, more people involved in the travel and that type of thing. But you got to think there had to be a way to create multiple bubbles or, mm-hmm. or, you know, make it a little safer. I mean, you're doing NBA Countdown now. I mean, you've mm-hmm. got to appreciate the lengths that the NBA has gone to keep people safe. I mean, you know, from covering it, what's your take on, you know, the job that the NBA is doing and Adam Silver?
Man, it's incredible. Like, and I can't say enough, like, the miracle that they are working. And honestly, the way that they are in a lot of ways leading our country, you know what I mean? Like, the NBA has taken social justice initiatives into their own hands. WNBA too. I will not leave the women out. But they've shown us, like, every single time you see a player, that if they're not on the court, they basically have a mask on. If you are not playing that day, you are sitting on the bench with your mask on. The seats are socially distanced, even though they're playing in the games, you know, together. They're like, right. But when you sit over here, the message we will send to the entire world is that social distancing still matters if you are not on the court. You know, coaches are wearing masks. If you are a reporter and you're tier one, you have to wear a mask. You're getting tested right. constantly. DeAndre Ayton was late to a test. He didn't play in the first quarter because he had to wait until the results came. You will not be on this court risking, you know, the bubble's very fragile. You can't risk it, you know? And so they set up these rules, they set up a plan, and they followed through with it in every way, shape, and form. And I think it's incredible to see. Like you said, I am thankful for it because that means I have a job. We have a sport to cover. Right. We have Lakers and Trailblazers. I get to watch Dame Lillard go off, you know, right. every single game that he plays in the bubble, and it's incredible. Right. But I do think that they are like thought leaders. They have been industry leaders in a lot of ways. They're leading us and showing us how to deal with this pandemic in ways that like we never knew were possible. And they're innovative and making it look great. The product still looks great. The games look great. The virtual fans are awesome. Like you still feel completely included in the product.
Right. And like you said, a lot of it is just message based, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of like the players during press conferences still wearing a yeah. mask. I see I'm looking at other sports. They're not doing that. So the NBA, I think, yeah. is a model.
I did an interview with Dame Lillard and he had a mask on, even though he was by himself. I was right. like, send the message, receive the message. You will wear your mask.
right. No,
incredible.
The NBA is doing a great job. I think we've lost Bill momentarily, hopefully because of the Wi-Fi connection. So hopefully he'll get that back. Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Also, you mentioned mm-hmm. before you're in the studio. What are the protocols that you had to go through and that other studio members had to go through in order to make that happen again?
Yeah, I mean, technically, we're kind of like in a bubble, too. I mean, we depend on each other to stay safe. So I had to get two negative tests. So I had a negative test before when I left Georgia. And then when I flew into Connecticut, literally went straight to the hospital, got my test done, and knew within 4 hours that I had another negative test. And I had to have both of those before I could enter into the studio. And so when you're in the studio, I mean, everything is wiped down clean. Everyone's wearing a mask. The only time you're not wearing a mask is if you are sitting on set and the camera's coming on. You know, they have face shields, they have masks. Our guys have gloves if they need them. We can only have two people in the conference room, period. You know, if you're going to be in the conference room, like there is a restriction to every single space that you're in. No, you can't be in the same workspace. You know, there's like three computers in between each person. And so it's interesting to see the lengths that we've gone through too, to make sure that we're all safe, but it's like our new normal, right? It's like the TNT, you can land a jet on their set right now and they have plexiglass in between them. So right. that's like the way our shows are going to look for a while.
I'm back.
What's there up, Bill? Yes.
Oh man. Talk about Bush leaguery. Oh my God. I'm sure you covered all this when I was gone. Is there anything about how we're doing our jobs now, Maria, that you like that you'd like to see stick as we move forward, that become part of the quote unquote new normal?
I think it kind of levels the playing field for storytelling because everyone has access to everyone. If you have a relationship with Kimball Walker, just insert athlete name, and you wanted to put them, have an IG live chat, you can do that. And I do like seeing athletes or the subjects of our stories in a home setting where they're a little bit more relaxed, where things are a little bit more comfortable, where they just watch their favorite show and then they're able to come and hop on and have a conversation. So I do really enjoy that. Like it takes some of the glitz and the glamour away from it, the formality Like, it kind of breaks down that wall a little bit. And I think that that's great. And that helps people that have great relationships. So I hope that that continues moving forward, because I love doing NFL draft conversations with kids who, like, literally they're in front of their high school because they're about to go run the track or something like that. And, like, let's talk about your high school days and how that compares to being ready to go and be a pro. But there's still things I miss. I mean, I miss being able to go on the road and have a sit-down interview. Like, you miss that, the one-on-one connection you get with people. I'm a person that thrives off of that, like relationships. And I'm kind of just stuck in my New York apartment, just like y'all are, you know. We are probably 100 blocks away from each other, but, you know, you can't see anyone. You got to go straight home and go straight to work, because you got to keep the bubble of work preserved, you know. So it's interesting.
Let's talk about your career. You know, I mean, now you're a superstar and all, but how did you get to this point? I mean, obviously you were an athlete in college. Was broadcasting something that you always wanted to do? Was it a situation that you just wanted to stay involved in sports? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get to where you are?
Yeah, that was my initial thing. I just wanted to be in sports, but I knew that I didn't want to be a coach one day. So when you're a female athlete, conversation is not about to go make millions of dollars playing in the WNBA or playing overseas. It's like, I'm going to go play overseas and that'll be a great experience. And I had a conversation with my basketball coach. He's like, you can go overseas and that'll be great. But after 2 years, you're going to be back here and you're going to be looking for a job. You're going to miss your home. You're going to look for your job, because I'm very, like, tied to my family and I wouldn't like being gone for 9 months. And so I saw that people would come and broadcast our games. We would have, like, one volleyball game on at the time. You have maybe three basketball games that would be on TV. Now all of the games are on, which is awesome. But I was like, I could do that. I could go to practices and talk to coaches and talk to players and broadcast. So for me, the pinnacle of sports broadcasting was working the national championship for volleyball and hopefully making it to, like, the women's Final Four as a sideline reporter. Like, that's all I wanted to do. Right. If you could toss in there maybe hosting the Final Four, I would be like, oh, okay, like, I overachieved. So to be able to do some of the things that I'm doing now, like, never dreamed it. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't the dream that I had for myself.
Mm. Was there a breakthrough? I mean, mm-hmm. I know we kind of like these, kind of like there's one breakthrough, but what actually opened your eyes in terms of possibilities? Like, the ceiling almost was removed. You know, sometimes you have to really imagine greatness. You have to, you have to imagine greatness, then you have to dare to be great and be out there. And what was that process for you?
I think a big turning point for me was the launch of the SEC Network. So that was August 14th, 2014. And I remember I was going to take a pay cut because I was kind of just like a freelance. I worked for ESPN, but I would work for Fox and I would work for whoever called, and I would go do volleyball games, women's basketball games. And I was doing like a full slate of ESPN games at the time, but I didn't have insurance through anyone, like completely freelance. So I just had a game rate. And they called, I auditioned a couple of times, and trust me, I sucked on both of my auditions, like, was terrible. You would have had to see through it and see some potential in order to be like, okay, she could be a host. And they called me back and asked if I was interested in doing it. And it was long hours. We were covering every single sport. You know, that was the first time I got to host the women's basketball tournament. I was hosting the SEC softball tournament, you know, and we're at live events and you're on a desk and you're by yourself. And that's when I learned, I was like, I can handle a lot. You know, I thought I was just a reporter, but now I see myself as a host that can own a show, that can own a championship, that could interview coaches on a desk, that could toss to this and that. That when things break down, I don't let it break down, you know, because that's what your job has to be as a host. And I think that was a turning point in the way that people at the company viewed me too. So you go from only being a sideline reporter that specializes in a couple of sports to, well, you know what? She can do a baseball highlight if you need her to, or she can talk track and field or swimming and diving or whatever sport, you know, was the focus for SEC. So that was huge for me. And then once I started doing that, I was like, it's all TV. Like, it's all the same. It doesn't matter if it's the Lakers or if it's LSU track. Like, you got to come on and be informed and entertain. It's the same. It's all the same thing.
Yeah. Who was your, we say role model, but particularly for women and particularly for Black women?
Yeah.
You know, Pam Oliver or others. But was there anybody that you could look at the way that, I'm sure you have millions of young African-American young women who are looking at you as a, damn, I could do that. What about, but when you were searching for role models, who were those people?
I mean, for me, it was definitely Robin Roberts. And I mean, by the time I started really looking into broadcasting, she was just on GMA, you know, so I don't remember the Robin that was on ESPN as much as I'm familiar with her, just like America's sweetheart, you know, the person that you want to be like it was Robin. I mean, honestly, it's Oprah, like a Black woman who's on TV every single day. Like, you would come home, you watched every episode of Oprah, you talked about it with your mom, or my grandma loved Oprah. Like, that was a thing. And so I think it was like this, that's like your Black excellence beacon, you know? So I didn't necessarily see it in sports all the time. I knew of Pam Oliver. I wasn't too tied to the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, I was very into college football, being from Georgia and all that stuff. So you didn't see anyone that looked like you, to be honest. Like, I saw Lisa Salters, and we talk about it too. I was like, you were the only one. Like, how did you? And then I was so sad when she left and went to Monday Night Football, because I'm like, well, who's going to do it now? Who is the Black girl that's going to be on the sideline?
You.
And then it was me. literally. But I had a college football coach tell me, he was like, you have to hold the line. Like, you can't leave college football until you know that there is another version of, or there's another Black girl ready to step into it. And that's a reality that we kind of face, or kind of like the burden that you bear just being in the space.
Do you see it as a burden? Cause I was thinking about this too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you go about making sure in the next, let's say 10 years from now, that people are talking about you kind of it? And, I grew up watching you, mm-hmm. you were my role model, blah, 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 blah. How do you go about ensuring that there are a ton of Maria Taylors that follow you into the industry? Mm.
I mean, I have a nonprofit that's literally dedicated to helping women and minorities get into the sports industry. Like, whether that is, if you wanted to be a director, great, at ESPN, if you wanted to be on camera, if you want to be an athletic director, like Carla Williams, she's a Black woman that's the athletic director at UVA, then I'm trying to help you get in the business. But I also think it's important too. I mean, when I'm on the sidelines, if I'm at Oregon, I have a young Black girl shadowing me, because I want her to see what it's like to be a reporter on the sidelines. I want her to go in the truck and meet our producers. I want her to shake hands with, you know, Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit, or meet David Pollack. And to the credit of my entire college football community, they've been so welcoming. You know what I mean? Like, they're used to me having a little Black girl with me. So she's going to be in the production meeting. She's going to be at the show. She's going to stand right next to you, and she's going to see how I get hooked up to audio and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, it's exposure. Like, if you don't have that opportunity to be exposed, you're never going to believe you can do it. So I try to do that at every single stop that I make.
Yeah, it's kind of like the idea, what you described is, I mean, everybody talks about mentorship, which is fine, but the real deal is sponsorship. You know, when you take that young Black girl and say, hey, this is, they meet the people you know. They go in the meetings that you go into. That is almost a paradigm. Let me ask you, you've really become, I had a conversation with a sister maybe a couple of years ago, and her white supervisor. And her frustration was that she couldn't really say anything. In other words, they want her to be in this box. Mm-hmm. You know, you look good, just read the lines, but we don't want you to kind of step out there. And you really have been freer in that area. You've spoken about issues. I mean, forcefully, pointedly. Mm-hmm. Is it, somebody give you a green light? Or was it that as you assumed more celebrity or more whatever it is that allows you to kind of go out there, you just decided to use it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely twofold. So in the same way, if you were a rookie on a team, you don't speak up in the same way as you do when you're a senior captain, you know? Right. And so I recognize the responsibility of, if I don't speak up in meetings, or if I don't speak up on television, then like the production assistant in Bristol is not going to have the opportunities that they deserve because I didn't say anything, you know? And that's the, I have to assume the position. That's the position that I hold now, or that's the level of respect. And then you also get to a point where you're like, you have to, we keep talking about it as Black women. It's like, stop being humble. It's like, I'm good at my job. Like, it's almost like, what are you going to do? If you fire me, like, people would actually, we would be upset about it at this point.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm going to continue to excel. I'm going to continue to work hard. I'm going to continue to be a good teammate and make sure that everyone, you know, feels good or I'm adding value at all times. So you can't feel any type of way about my opinion on how the way Black people are treated because I'm speaking the facts. You know what I mean? Like, it, although it might be uncomfortable for you, that doesn't change my standing at this company or any company that I would work with, you know? And so I do believe that you kind of ascend to that level. You ascend to that level of confidence and you realize, Jalen said this, I keep saying the reason why I even said what I said on First Take was because of Jalen. He's like, the black community needs me more than I need this job. So I'm willing to just risk it all. And I think I even said it in the talk, like, you know, this is the first time I felt like I can say whatever I want when I come on camera and I'm not going to feel bad about it. So that's kind of where I am. I'm just like, I'm not holding back. We're just going to speak the truth. Like I said, when people show their colors, we're going to talk about it. We're going to try to talk our way through. We're going to try to come up with solutions. But I'm speaking for the production assistant. I'm speaking for the young girl at home that feels like she can't say anything. And we'll see where it goes. If not, my mama got a house in Georgia. I can just move in.
I hear you.
They good.
And as you know, I mean, a lot of people are speaking out now ever since George Floyd, you know, the NBA, which you're covering, protests, kneeling, you know, names on the jerseys, Black Lives Matter on the court. What's your take on all of that? You know, the WNBA has been at the forefront for a long time in terms of protest. What's your feeling on the way different leagues are going about it?
You know, I got to give my props to the WNBA because they were out here like, we're not standing for the national anthem. We have something to say. We're going to be wearing these shooting shirts. I can't breathe. They did it before anyone. Like,
right.
And, you know, basically just like leave it to women and or Black women. It's like, we'll do it ourselves. Don't worry about it. But they're so used to being dismissed. They're so used to being criticized that they are the first people to throw their hat in. Like that they've been given their own green light just by the way society treats them. And I do love the way it's just shedding light and like forcing the conversation. And I don't do an interview with a player without asking him what his social justice initiative is. Like, I think in some way we can all do our small little part or whatever, or every single show you're going to hear, I'm going to give you a quote from a civil rights leader. We are going to show the Black Lives Matter on the court. We're going to have a montage about Black Lives Matter. Like, it's something that now it has to be intentional. We're trying to weave it into the fabric of the NBA culture, you know, and trying not to let it go back in any way, shape or form. And I think the players are the reason why we can do that because they haven't let the conversation die down. They are still talking about it. They're still wearing, you know, the shirts or the Donovan Mitchell bulletproof vests. And we're saying her name. We're saying Breonna Taylor. We have to, you know, so I appreciate the way that they're using their platform. Because there was a time, remember, when athletes were like, I'm just an athlete. I'm not a role model. Like, right. Don't look up to me. Grab it by the horn. Stand on it. Yeah. No, I love where we are right now.
Do you see real change, you know, coming from all of this? You know, we were asking this question maybe when the protests were going on after George Floyd. Now some time has passed. Do you sense that we're going to see some real change from all of this? You know, from, you know, you work at a big corporation. Do you feel like corporations are changing, society changing fast enough?
Definitely not fast enough. You know what I mean? I think that corporation, like my dad worked for the federal government and he'll tell me horror stories about how he was trying to get promoted and XYZ. And I give him, you know, some of my experiences and there's the trickle down effect. Like, I think that every single corporation is none of it is built for Black people. If we're being honest, you know that Jamal, Bill knows it when he's on, like it's not built for us. And right. So we're constantly having to force our way in and knock down walls and bring someone else with us. And it's definitely not going to happen fast enough because it should have happened 20 years ago. But I do think awareness is the first step. And that's where we are. Now everyone's aware. The question is, who's going to change it? And I guarantee you what it's not going to be Maria and Jamal. It's going to be our white bosses. It's going to be the board of directors. It's going to be the ones that are in the room that can decide whether or not someone gets promoted based on how many direct reports that are people of color. You know what I mean? When you start tying your money into it, when you start tying the success of the company to diversity and inclusion, then we might start moving somewhere. But hey, listen, progress moves slow. I'm sure there's some great quote about that, and it's frustrating and we're going to continue to live through it, you know, and at some point we're going to be like, all right, I'm done. I'm cool on it. You know what I mean? And like, try to do something else. Like, I think about that sometimes. sometimes I'm like, maybe I should just go teach. Like, maybe this is enough for me, or this is it. And then you see something that is disturbing and you don't want to be in the industry, or you wonder if corporate America will ever just accept you as you are. And I mean, only time will tell.
Right. No question. Before we let you go, you mentioned, you know, your nonprofit Winning Edge Leadership Academy, but mm-hmm. also you've joined forces with LeBron James's More Than a Vote initiative. What made you want to do that as being part of the process, voting? Has that always been an important part for you?
Yeah, I think I saw, I voted with my mom in Georgia in our primary, and you should have seen, you know, the news that night of people who waited outside for 12 hours to put in their vote, or people who, the volunteers that were working in all of these precincts maybe weren't sure how to handle the vote, or, you know, they were older in age, and there were so many issues with the voting process and it seemed like it really only happened in, you know, the city of Atlanta and the minority communities. And it was upsetting to me. And so for the first time, I think I was confronted with this, like, okay, I can see how voter suppression happens, or I can see how the same resources that me and my mom experienced when I went up to the suburbs and voted are not where my brother and my aunt and my niece and nephew live in the city of Atlanta. And so what LeBron is doing is coming in and shedding light on some of those discrepancies and making sure that everyone has an opportunity to vote, that there's an equal playing field, and, you know, opening up Phillips Arena in Atlanta for voters to be able to come in, because now look at all the space we have. And, you know, I want to go and volunteer. Like, I don't want to work on vote election day. Like, I want to be in there working and making sure that that is moving smoothly for my community in downtown Atlanta. I want to be at Phillips Arena, like, opening the door, like, but this is going to be a good experience for you. It's going to be a good experience for me. And just make sure that everyone really does believe their vote matters, because it's important. We all saw Michelle Obama glow. You know, we need to be out here supporting her with our vote.
No question about it. Bill and I have talked about this for years, really, about something like this, like where, mm-hmm. you know, the influential athletes that everybody looks up to get involved in, you know, trying to get out the vote. And I guess the times are so real right now that, mm-hmm. that everything came to a head. But is this something that you feel will resonate with voting age, younger mm-hmm. people, that they'll see these NBA stars, LeBron, everybody else, and be mm-hmm. influenced by them?
I do, because I think every bit of it counts. And I do think that LeBron's reach is multicultural. You know what I mean? I think that he reaches out to the Latino community. You know, the Lakers fans love him. You know what I mean? So the Black community, obviously he is Black, but it's also like the mom at home that's been watching LeBron play for the last 17 years, who, like, if my mom knows his name and like your mom knows his name, like, and everyone knows who LeBron James is. So when right. he speaks on something, it matters. And sports is unique in that way, that it can tear down a lot of different walls, and it can bring people from a lot of different, you know, walks of life together. And so now that he's using that voice too, to be like, but let me tell you what the issues are with voting, or let me tell you why your vote matters, or young people, I need y'all to rise up and show up, you know, then that's all going to matter. So I think it's really important.
Let's hope so. Maria, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us. I'm a huge admirer of yours. You do a tremendous job, whatever you're doing, whether it's sideline reporting or in the studio. So keep up the good work. We're definitely watching you on NBA Countdown coming up. I know those must be long days.
Long day. We've got a quadruple header. It's like every time we're on the show, we're like, why we always got the quadruple headers?
Oh, man.
We're there from 1 to about 10:30. So maybe it's a normal work week. It's just a strange time.
I don't know. It seems like a lot. But of course, you're handling it with grace. So thanks again for joining us. And hopefully you'll join us again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jamal. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate you guys. Continue to have great
Bill's around here somewhere in the yeah. Wi-Fi universe.
All right. Peace be with you, Bill.
Thanks a lot, Maria.
Thanks, Jamal.
See you soon.
All right. Thanks.
Wow, man. Great interview with Maria Taylor. Man, she, like you said, she is a superstar, and yeah. a superstar didn't mind speaking her mind. So that really, really, really great. Really great. Great get, Murph.
No problem. In this COVID-19 age with Zooms and Wi-Fi connections, you know, it's tough to make it all go smoothly all the time. But
oh man, I've just been tearing out. Well, I don't have a lot of hair to tear out, but just dropping off, my battery's low. I mean, just
right.
The pitfalls are endless. So anyway, what else? Lakers lose to Portland. Great news. That was about, I mean, they've still got, by the time we get back on next week, do you think that Portland will be up in the series, or do you think this is a blip?
I still think obviously the Lakers are the better team, even though they really only have two guys, both LeBron and I think Anthony Davis has to, he has to be on his A game every game. They're going to need like close to 40 points from him a game, because the rest of their supporting cast, Portland just has a better, has more overall talent after that.
Yeah. I mean, and Anthony Davis, man, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, look at this guy. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they're all motivated. And some people say you can't blame him. You got to blame the supporting cast. But there is no supporting cast. They have a great record, I guess. I mean, they had the best record in the West. So
But like you said, like everyone, that was the regular season. Now it's playoffs are totally different. Everybody's coming to play. Like their lives depended on it. The one thing I was thinking about, because I was actually rooting for, I was actually rooting for Portland. But then I started think, maybe, if the Lakers and LeBron loses, is that going to diminish LeBron's message, from the bubble? So it's almost like, I don't want to lose LeBron because I don't want to lose that voice.
Well, but no, then he'll be free to operate on the outside.
True.
He could, once he's free, he could be doing commercials or, helping to get out the vote.
Yeah, he can dedicate more time to that. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, rather than being in the damn bubble. I mean,
So I'll keep rooting for Portland.
I'll be in a bubble. I mean, what? Yeah. I'm rooting for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, it'd be great. That's a long, then they got to play what? Then they play the conference finals?
This is the first round. So the second, they'd have to play probably Houston in the second round. And then the conference finals, probably the Clippers down the line. Whoever keeps winning is going to be in there for a long time. I think the finals are slated for mid-October.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, Jamal, that's just too long, man. It really is. I mean,
can you imagine?
It's fine. It's novel. You imagine the NCAA tournament in one spot for like 5 months.
Right, true.
Or 3 months. That's a long. Now, and I'm sure the NCAA, because as Krzyzewski was saying, we cannot have another, we have to have a tournament. They got to have a tournament.
They have to. They have
so
all
they
that money.
Do the that's, bubble too.
That's, yeah, I heard, that's, I've heard some discussions about what college basketball is thinking about, where they have multiple conference bubbles and then they do an NCAA tournament, like maybe in Indianapolis in a bubble. Instead of having the different sites, they just bring everybody to Indianapolis, put them in their hotel rooms, test them all the time, and play all the games in Indianapolis. Which is better than, that's only 3 weeks compared to what? 3 months for the pros. Well, I guess when you talk about the whole season, it's much longer. If they're in
it's
conference
a long time.
Bubbles.
I mean, I don't know. How do you do, Big East tournament? Do you do away with tournaments? The idea of bringing up the bubble thing seems to be the only thing that works.
Right. That's the only responsible thing. Half responsible.
Don't leave half responsible. Well, ultimately, it's all about money. It's all being driven by.
Right. And that's why they have to have a tournament again, because they just lost out on $900 million by not having the last NCAA tournament. They can't do that 2 years in a row. They can't lose, almost $2 billion.
Yeah. I was looking at some of the Sports Business Journal and the numbers, I don't know if I could call it really quickly, but the numbers were ridiculous. How much money conferences made. I mean, in 2018, 2019, but the amount of money, I'm trying to look it up, it was ridiculous. And I guess that's what this whole thing has, it showed us so clearly that this is just all about money. I mean, I should say all about money, but
It is. It's all about. If they were only going to make a couple hundred dollars from this stuff, it would not be. It would be shut down right away.
They would be making these brothers, you know. Oh, here we go. Because they want to play football so badly. Texas has just signed a company called Germ Logic to an expanded deal that will include treatment of playing surfaces and all fan areas. The Longhorns' official germ control provider fills an important category for a company that has typically stayed behind the scenes. I mean,
yeah,
you know, has that been
tested or vetted? Like, do we know that would even work? You know, it's ridiculous.
The Power Five schools generated close to $8.3 billion in combined athletic revenue in 2018-2019, according to Sports Business Journal Research. Wow. He analyzed school conferences to come up with some eye-popping numbers for this week's magazine. I mean, so the number of schools that top $200 million in revenue, Texas, Texas A&M, Ohio State. Schools in the SEC in top 10 in revenue, A&M, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, LSU, compared to the Big Ten. Three. So, you know, $781.5 billion, jeez, Big Ten revenue, the most of any conference. So, I mean, I guess it goes on and on and on. But before the pandemic, that's like Katrina pulled the curtain over inequities in society. I mean, that was the first real time when after Katrina, now COVID, of course, large scale, but also this whole myth of amateurism, why they use these guys, these amateurs, to make billions of dollars to support salaries, to support non-revenue sport. And the idea is that Black people are not even nowhere nearly represented in the corridors of power and control, in these things. They're basically used, and it's so poignant that that's what we were brought here for in the first place, 400 years ago, to make white people rich. And that's what we're doing now, whether it's NFL, NBA, NCAA, you know, college, big time college football, making white people wealthy, you know?
Yeah, can't say any better than that. Yeah. I mean, we don't, like you said, we're not represented and we don't benefit from all that money. Yeah, I saw the...
Not the communities don't benefit. You know, individuals benefit.
Yeah, a couple, you know, just a couple in, like, you know, some drops in the bucket. Benefit. I saw the, you know, all that money they make. I saw the mayor of Alabama was on TV the other day and he said, they asked him about college football. And he said, we got to have it. We got to have it. You know, they bring in $200 million just to Tuscaloosa.
Right.
The mayor of Tuscaloosa, not the mayor of Alabama. But the mayor of Tuscaloosa was on saying that we got to have college football. They bring $200 million just, you know, to the city alone every year.
You know, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what else you could say except –
what about after this? We see that amateurism has been exposed as a fraud. I mean, it always has been, but now it's just you can't miss it. Do you think anything changes in terms of player compensation based on all of this?
Maybe, but you know, the problem is, unlike the NFL, NBA, pro sports, there's no union. I think that some kind of way, some attorneys group or something has to do some type of class action. I don't know if it'd be a class action suit, but class action representation, you know, to represent athletes in Power Five conferences or something. But I mean, to answer your question, something, this is just so ridiculous that I think, just like with George Floyd being killed so openly, a lot of white people didn't believe it.
Right.
And now it's so blatant. So maybe the same thing happens with, it's so such blatant exploitation that maybe there's a move. Okay, the guy's got it. I don't know what you give him. Maybe insurance policy. Maybe put money in a trust fund, you know, so that when their 4 years of eligibility are up, they get some trust fund money, something like that. You know?
I mean, we do know the NCAA will give them as little as possible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they got it. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But that's why you need representation.
Right.
Pretty ridiculous. So what else?
The Washington football team. Daniel Snyder just hired Jason Wright, first black president of an NFL team. He played seven years in the league as a running back.
Wow, that's something a running back survives to be able to.
Seriously.
Well, but he's the head of business operations, not football operations. If you look at it, he's team president of business operations.
Okay, so no.
And then the fact that he's the first black team president, I mean, in 2020.
Right, in the entire NFL.
How the fuck do you, you know, although you look at the NBA, you know, the NBA's been getting the pass. Because right. The NBA, I think, only has, what, two team presidents, black team presidents?
If that.
So that's, you know, all these leagues, man, they're Black Lives Matter. Y'all can kneel. Y'all can put all kinds of messages on your gym shoes, you know, and on your uniform. So what? The power and control rests with white people.
Right.
How you seize that, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Snyder thing is funny. I mean, he has a black president of the team. He has a Latino coach, and he just hired a woman broadcaster. To me, it's kind of akin to James Dolan, another problematic figure. But despite being problematic, he had a black GM, black coach, black president of the Knicks.
Yeah, and he had a couple times. You know, then the black folks there couldn't deal with it. You know, mm-hmm. Fighting like wolves. Snyder, I'm happy for the brother. That's great.
Right.
But the fact that the first black team president in a league where 60 to 70% of players have been black for a long time, it just didn't start.
Right, right. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what's in store in the future for the Washington football team and the NFL.
NFL, I guess these cats are going to, by hook or crook, they're going to say, we're going to play football.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a report today saying that league executives are very confident they can get a full season, and I bet they are.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have to play.
Right.
So,
that just shows you, if there's a big cluster, just like the Major League Baseball, they're not going to be deterred by a few people getting it. That has to be already baked in to the plan.
Right. Yeah, they've already said we're going to lose some. You know, like, wow. Yeah. So, all right, man. Well, listen, it's been great. Maria Taylor was great. Great conversation. She is not a superstar. She's a superstar in the field.
Right.
Who speaks up.
Right.
And is trying to get more young women and young African-American women to follow. So that's great stuff.
Yeah, that's great. The work she's doing with her nonprofit, Winning Edge Leadership Academy, kind of reminiscent of the Roden Fellows a little bit.
A little bit, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's good. I mean, I think that as you bring people, if you really want to bring people in, there has to be some kind of organ. It has to be systematic.
Right.
All right, Murph. Listen, man. I know you got a lot of stuff to do. Places to go, errands to run. Sure.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it, as you do, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, always great, and we will team up next week.
Yep, next week.
Meanwhile, everybody, what's your commercial spiel you got to say?
The commercial spiel is make sure that you check us out on Apple Podcast and rate and review the show. Give us a good review. Give us a good rating. Ask a question in the review, and we'll answer it on the next podcast.
Do we get any of those, by the way?
We get reviews. We haven't gotten too many questions.
Okay. Ask questions, people. All right, man. Well, listen, Murph, see you next week. Everybody, take care. Continue to be safe. Pray for a change in the White House. Register to vote. You know, if there's any, you know, make sure people are registered to vote, then make sure that they vote.
Right.
And stay safe. God bless. Take care.
Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.